Hello and welcome back to a rebranded episode of Podcast Assemble, the show where you still come for your rambling geeky download. My name's Tommy and I am delighted, as always, to be joined by my friend and co-host from across the pond. It's our resident stuntman of the pod, DL. How are you, mate?
I am good, man. How are you? I'm the unsung hero of this podcast.
Unsung hero of the podcast. That's who you are, man. You keep me ticking along. And this is like the last episode we're going to do before you get married.
I know, dude.
So there, for anyone who doesn't know, we've literally recorded a couple of episodes to come out while we're away, but DL flies off to start proper preparations abroad.
Saturday.
Wow, that's so soon. We're recording on Thursday. That's awesome. That's so fun.
It is wild.
I guess you passed all the groomzilla nonsense.
I mean, there's a couple of hiccups in the last minute as we were talking about off air, but nothing big.
Wait, we don't talk off air. What do you mean? Nothing we literally arrive and we do this and then we leave.
100% genuine. Everything. All raw and unfiltered.
Man, that's so exciting. You fly and it's such a long flight.
God, I haven't actually thought about that. Because like, I don't usually do the Europe from Australia flight.
No, you go
so
US.
I'm gonna get to Dubai or wherever the hell we land,
12 hours
Singapore, and be like, oh, it's done.
No, it's not.
It's not. Isn't there like eight more or something?
Yeah, about that. Yeah. But that, yeah, and I mean, so for us, and like obviously, you know, my partner, she flies out a couple of days after us because we're going to Prague for your books, stag, hen, whatever you want to call it. Hens? Yeah. Call you a hen.
Okay.
Whatever you want to call it, depending on your region. And that then adds another flight into there.
Yeah.
So like not as part of that original flight, but we fly.
Yeah.
I personally fly here to Dubai, Dubai to Prague. But then you've got to go from Prague to Athens and Athens to Crete.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like it's so much flying.
Yeah.
You forget.
I spread it out a bit, thankfully, but you guys are going to be tired.
Oh my days. I've got so many sleeping tablets for that initial flight. Man, I am so excited to talk about a film today. I think it was on one of our most anticipated for the year, maybe mine.
I can't remember
because, you know, I don't think I even knew
about this movie.
Oh, I loved it. But the thing I love about how we are starting to get to see movies more and more often is we had a full date night around this.
Dude, the Ritz is firing.
Isn't it the best?
The date night around the Ritz is a real thing. It's emerging and we're loving it.
If you guys haven't heard, we talked about this a little bit last week. And we've talked about it on previous episodes. The Ritz is a small little, I think it's an independent cinema based here in Sydney in a place called Randwick. Ah, oh, man, the floor smells of popcorn. It just feels loved and lived in. You know what I mean?
It's got a bar.
Got a bar.
On top.
Took 25 minutes to get a beer.
I was
going to
say, I earned my beer. There was some kind of choir get together.
Yes,
there was. There was some kind of Kensington Choir Philharmonic, you know.
You should have joined.
Get together. And
they need that low C.
And they were not a low C.
A baritone.
Bro. I'm an alto, brotherfucker. Okay,
I do not know what any of that means, so I don't
get it. They had all that going on, and so they only had three bartenders and the choir.
And people
let's just say there
glasses.
Was an ensemble.
Okay.
It was a large group.
They were all going to the bar at the exact same moment that you needed a beer.
And I got it eventually, but I earned it. And then we had a you know, quick park as well this time. It was an easy park. Found a good park.
It's the dream.
Yeah. What do you, you know, the George Costanza in me was yelping for joy. And then we went to what might be the most romantic Italian restaurant that you picked out. I mean, thank you,
bud. It was interesting.
I was literally being serenaded by a good-looking Italian gazing into Tommy's eyes.
I mean, you got the picture of me with love. I mean, it was a little tacky.
What else do you need? I mean, yeah.
Good food.
There was some tack, for sure.
Good food altogether.
It was good, man. I mean, I was burping a bit from all that cheese, but...
It was a lot of cheese. For two men who are on shred for the wed diet.
That was a bold little...
It was...
a little vice.
We definitely went sideways on this, 100%.
A bold little side detour.
But as part of that, I also mentioned to you, and I don't think you'd seen it, but we got sent by a bunch of friends of the show, including friend of the show Joe, including friend of the show Matt, a load of people, the Deadpool trailer which dropped this week.
I did see it.
What do you think?
It was good. It was the way trailers should be.
Right.
It didn't reveal too much. It gave you just enough... like. Obviously, you're hoping there's some MCU crossover.
Yes.
And
well, there's like a...
there's indicators of...
There's just minor indicators of it.
Like the Doctor Strange. They didn't show who or how or what or give you any misdirection, which is like literally how trailers should be.
Right. You know? I love that. And I wonder how much
gets
of it
people
is
to the theater as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Because you're like, what? I don't know everything that's going to happen, or I don't think I know that's everything.
That's really interesting, actually. Because I think I've talked about this in the podcast before. I'll be very quick about this. But I read a thing not that long ago that says people are more likely to go and see a film if they have an idea of what is going to happen. As in, the trailer spoils a lot of it.
I don't know about that.
It's a fact.
I don't know about that. But
it's a study that they did.
How do you study that? Like, like this, the, like that is such a subjective
term.
You
have a control group.
No, no, but that's such a subjective, like you don't think this revealed what's going to happen? It did. It just didn't reveal everything. It revealed that they're going to go try and save the multiverse. There's obviously his world has collided.
Right.
And there's going to be elements from the MCU because you saw a the fucking thing.
Yeah,
you didn't need to know who or what or why. You still knew what was going to happen.
I'm talking about that. The difference between like that trailer, which is ambiguous, including the likes of, you know, like the Green Knight,
yeah,
where it's completely ambiguous, versus something like, I don't know, fucking Transformers, where it literally shows you the last scene of the movie.
I guess my point is, I think this is a proper middle ground,
yes,
where you're putting it in the camp of the Green Knight. I wouldn't agree to that. I don't think the study would have been that nuanced.
I agree. It's probably not that nuanced, but this is what trailers look. This is what I wanted from
Fuck
this trailer.
Trailers.
This is what I wanted from this trailer.
That's what I want from all trailers. Or give me
Hugh
A24.
Jackman. Yikes, he's got big again.
Yeah, dude, how does he keep doing
yoked.
A couple funny jokes in there. The Wolverine, you know.
There's a lot of callbacks to other movies.
Wolverine
as well.
ED. Pretty good.
There's a lot of callbacks to other movies. Yeah. Like, you know the scene in, I can't remember which one it is, it's Days of Future Past maybe, or not that one, it's in that timeline where the young Magneto and Xavier go to him in a bar and he's like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like they've really copied that scene. It's great. I love what they're doing with this.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to be fun.
So thank you, friends of the show, for sending us that in. If you do want heads up at PodcastEmble or thepodcastemble@gmail.com, you can send us memes, news, reviews. We love it when you do. But I just wanted to quickly, before we move on, talk to you a little bit about Severance, dear.
Oh, you know, I'm a fan. I can
you've
always
been doing
talk.
A rewatch.
Yeah, finished and loving it.
And
finished the pod
it.
As well. The Severance pod. I binged everything.
Right. Because we've talked about this on maybe a future episode as well. But, yeah. But I had a theory because last week you talked specifically about how do they... Will this have the Westworld season 2 issue where they don't know what to do once they get out of the office
main
space,
setting, yeah.
Right? What do you do when you get there? I had a theory about this, and let's vibe on this a little bit because I'm interested what you think. What if it's not just the office space? Because you never see them leave the town either. What if the town is an extension of that and they actually have a life outside of that town? You know, the little like...
So you're talking like a Severinception?
Yes. Literally.
That would be wild.
Now, wouldn't that
but
be
does
wild?
That mean everyone in the town is severed or just certain strategic people?
Well,
that actually is a really good twist. That I could see happening. And also, they've already indicated that like there's many, many a hint that this town is kind of owned, run, or at least influenced by all the Lumen Kier lineage.
Yes, the billionaires in the world.
Well,
yes.
But there not are even just whoever owns that company. I guess it would be billionaires.
But there are people who overlap, right? So there are people who can be in the office and out of the office and have all the memories of overlapping, right? Who aren't severed in the office. But I wonder if when they step out of the town, there is a similar, like, I don't know.
Even for them.
Yeah.
Severinception. I like it.
Love that idea.
I like that idea. I'm going to give that one a great A.
I'm tossing this out to you.
Yeah, I like
Let's
that
workshop.
Idea. I think it is a good way to expand, but also keep the concept.
Right.
That's actually a really...
And then they it's like that...
Too bad if they didn't know about this, it's already wrapped.
I should have told them. God damn it.
So I hope they knew.
Hit me up, Adam Scott. I got
to... there's a lot of interesting theories about, you know, the world beyond Kier as we know him. Like, some people think that, what's his name? That guy that's so weird.
All of them?
No, the husband of Adam Scott's sister.
Oh yeah.
That he's actually like, because there's this one Kier that's like been an offshoot that was like the black sheep of the family, and some people think that he's kind of an offshoot of that side of the family.
Interesting.
And then you could think about how does that role, like, well, why would he be there? It's like they literally severed him to control him
and keep him in the
that
town.
That would be wild.
There you go.
Because it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like why all these
so
people
weird?
Fucking live here.
Yeah. Mate, we've nailed it. That's what's going to happen in season 2.
Could be. Yeah.
We should be writers, man. We do this every
you
week.
Know, audit, like, keep the receipts on this one.
Yeah, we'll come
keep
back to
this. Keep
the
receipts on this one.
Imagine if this actually happens and I've just like...
That would be fucking huge.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
I wonder if there's a Reddit thread on it.
I wonder if I... Yeah,
you can go get some karma points if you post right now. You could be that dude.
I could be that dude.
If not, I'll just steal your idea.
Because there are times where like I will regurgitate something and I will try to always be like, I heard this on X podcast or I heard this somewhere.
Yeah,
but
give Tommy
this is
credit.
This is a Tommy thought.
Give Tommy his due. I want some thought of my own that I actually stole from someone.
Okay, which is
so, I don't know what this says about my algorithm.
Oh, me. Probably
but
a lot.
I was getting like, I think I follow a lot of like random like actor accounts because I like to see them talking about their movies or like interviews and stuff. But what also happens is you get like these like random fan accounts that like are put into your algorithm to like show you reels, And so I got this random reel of this extremely good looking dude named Jordan Barrett.
More extremely good looking than Ryan Gosling?
Ryan Gosling.
Different types of good
looking. Yeah, very different. Okay. Yeah, one, you know, he's a charmer. And it popped up in my newsfeed, and it was like this weird glam post of him like sparkling with different like headshots in his hair. And I sent it to you, and I was like, this is what the golds from Red Rising should be. And I added Pierce Brown in the comments. This is Priam at Pierce Brown. This man for Priam.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Red Rising. It's like one of the golds. It's like super good looking, but and like really heralded, and then just like dies instantly.
Immediately.
So
in the first book, yeah.
So this is my suggestion. I have my own. Hey, go cast that guy. If he gets casted, you heard it.
Did he comment back?
He hasn't commented. he hasn't responded.
Blanked.
He's stealing my idea, which I stole from another mate, Kyle. So. Fair.
Kyle, we'll give you the props on this. We'll also tag you in that post. Red Rising casting, the only thing I would say about him was, like, he didn't look massively tall. And I know that's not an issue, because either you can use
I don't know if that matters.
Creative camera angles or give him some, like, I don't know, give some fucking stilts or something.
Did you see that jawline?
it's a beautiful jawline, DL. I will absolutely give you that. We talked about casting last week. So, guys, if you like Red Rising in that book series, even Golden Sun, we actually gave a really deep dive into that last week. Go back and check out last week's episode. Yeah. I think we talked about Civil War last week. It was a bit of a doozy, I think.
It was a good week.
Different, but also this is a very good a very good film as well. So I'm excited to talk about today's main topic.
I definitely am.
Guys, if you want to hear us banter about our weeks, feel free to stick around. There's plenty more to come. Otherwise, you can jump around. You can jump directly to the main topic, which, as we've mentioned, is going to be the Fall Guy, which is... I'm really excited to talk about it. There will be time codes in the description, as always, supplied by friend of the show and editing master, Mr. Matthew Bliss of blissery.fm. You guys know algorithms work, though, right? Like, you know what would help us a lot?
Likes and subscribes and stars?
Yeah, we're not going to beg here, guys, but if you give us a 5-star review, that would be lovely. That would be really fantastic. You can do it in-app, right there, whatever you're using, Spotify, Apple, whatever it looks like. Yeah, give us a little comment as well. We'll call you out on the show if you did. That'd be wonderful.
It would be.
What have you been up to, buddy?
What have I been up to? Other than surfing. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of like that. Like
surfing?
Surfing the web.
I know you're a surfer.
Like casting things. Like I just talked about the Priam thing. I've been doing a lot of fan debate casting. Did you see the rumor that Leonardo DiCaprio is looking at a Frank Sinatra role with Martin Scorsese? How do we feel about this?
Looks wise?
Just in general.
Can pull it off. I don't know about singing. Can he sing?
I think this is so... No.
So
there's no way.
So
this is so off. Like, I hope this is a bad rumor. This is I hope this isn't true.
Is it?
Do you think he has the chops to pull this off?
This?
I just saw multiple sources online. You know, like one of those things that's unconfirmed but confirmed. Like,
well, I think he's got the charm and he does well with, you know, really getting into a role, getting his teeth into a role, understanding what the character means. I just don't think he can fucking sing.
Yeah.
Plus, if you see any of the movies that Frank Sinatra was in, they're really bad. And I'm pretty sure they were
He's a good actor. It's like this weird Inception. No, I just don't. Look, I don't know. Like, I just kind of feel like it may be easier to act like you have autism than it is to act like you can sing like Frank Sinatra.
Are you talking about what's Gilbert Gray?
Call me crazy? Is that bold?
It's bold.
I think certainly it's harder to pretend to sing like Frank Sinatra.
I mean, they could just dub it.
Yeah, but then it's not really accurate. Anyway, I digress. I may have canceled myself. We can move on to...
In your deep dives into the web, did you see that apparently Quentin Tarantino is apparently moving away from the project that he was claiming was going to be his 10th and final project? So he was writing...
So he's
going
to do a new 10th and final?
Called The Critic, the movie critic, which was... I mean, look, it's everything. It's him talking about Hollywood and how it's changed and like how critics are something dark side. And apparently he's changed his mind. For me, it's like, why is he limiting himself to like 10 quotation mark movies? Like, so dumb. Just say you want to do more movies.
Because I think he's seen people, like he's just seen enough directors. I've actually watched an interview on this. Like, why is he? I don't want him to. Who cares? Keep going. But he wants to end before he's bad. And he's seen enough directors that he's like loved. Where he like, they think they still have it and they make a bunch of movies that just don't have it and he doesn't want to go out like that. That's what I've seen in interviews for him. Like he's literally said that. Like if you think about Scorsese, dude, like I'm not going to lie, I still love that he's making movies.
Yeah.
I still love going
to
watch
all
of
his movies.
I'll still watch them and I'll be depressed throughout.
Especially if it's Kills of the Flower Moon-esque.
I will literally just be traumatized. But I'm glad they exist. Are they as good as his other ones? Like, no, they're not. We can agree. I haven't even watched The Irishman. I still haven't watched The Irishman. I'm about to fly 25 hours. I have all the time in the world. I won't watch
The Irishman.
No. I won't do
neither.
It.
Neither, absolutely not. I guess, though, there's like a difference there between limiting yourself to just 10 movies and saying, I'm going to get to, I don't know, what is he now? He must be mid-50s. Yeah. Say I get to 65 or say I get to 70. If I don't have another movie in me, I'm just going to call it a day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just like cut it, like have a cutoff point. Don't be like, I'm going to make 10 movies full stop.
It is kind of feel like an arbitrary number.
And technically he's already done 10 movies because he did Kill Bill Volume 2, which is technically part of the same movie, but it's like,
that's
bro,
what he said.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
this feels like semantics. I agree. But why do you think he canceled it? Just like wasn't vibing, obviously.
I don't know. Maybe
did they give any indication?
Maybe it's cancel culture. Who knows? Maybe it's just
he wouldn't
not cave
to that.
He wouldn't give a shit. Actually, to be honest.
I mean, this is the man that literally cast himself to have Selma Hayek's foot in his mouth.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's worried about like external perceptions of his.
That's
work.
A very good point. Yeah. The man who can embellish his foot fetish more than
literally,
anyone else in the entire
just
world,
like by literally embodying it. Anyway,
his choices are spectacular for his own gains. I did a fun thing this week, DL. I finally finished Shogun.
Nice.
You know,
it's a bit of a bore, but
it's just, okay. Let's talk about this very quickly because I was actually talking with a friend of the show, Matthew Bliss, earlier about this. And Matthew Bliss had some fantastic POVs, which I will read out. Dale, do you want a couple of full spoilers for Shogun? Are you going to finish it? Or are you?
I will finish it, but okay. I don't mind being.
You don't mind being spoiled. Okay, full spoilers for Shogun then, very quickly. Mr. Matthew Bliss's POV was that he thought it was an absolute ripper. He loved the fake out flash forward ending, which I'll touch on in just a moment, and that it turned out that Torunaga's secret heart was the same as everyone else's. He was just better at playing the game. Now, for a bit of context around that,
that's not surprising.
For a bit of context around that. Effectively, what happens is Torunaga, by way of people within his camp dying or there have been tragedies around him, he drags out the war and drags out the war so long that it causes division within
the
main camp, yeah. Where with all the, what are they called? The regents within the regions.
I mean, I'll tell you what, that makes sense because this movie did drag, or this show did drag on a bit.
Yes. And I make the point that I was a little disappointed that there wasn't like a crescendo of this movie. Yeah. I didn't need it to be a huge battle. I didn't need it to be, you know, the two massive armies fighting against each other. I felt there needed to be something in the way of action. There was a small action scene at the very end of the seventh episode, but I was a bit disappointed. Like, and I get it. They finished the book. So all of the book is done. They're not going to do a season two, apparently, even though it's making them a ton of money, probably.
Is there only one book?
It's only one book.
The book is massive, I heard.
Yeah. Well,
it's crazy they were able to condense it.
Yeah, they've used all the material.
Eight episodes. And there was
a few things that really took me out of the show as well. Like, so they clearly used the volume for a lot of this. So in terms of when they were doing like big cinematic vista shots where Torunaga's on a horse with his fucking falcon and he's like looking out. It's like, just go to a hillside. It's not that difficult. And it really took me out of it. And sometimes they would blur the background. They would blur an already CGI background to bring the focus on the foreground.
You mean like portrait mode?
Just use a different shot. Like, why? And honestly,
people love portrait mode. The millennials love portrait mode.
They love portrait mode. Yeah. I'm definitely a millennial, so can't agree with all of what you just said. And honestly, there were a few bits like that. Like the thing I liked about it was more focused on the politics and the infighting and people persuading people within different camps to work for them and not work for them. It just like it built up this samurai story that didn't happen. I was like, I just wanted something. Get them in the armor once or twice. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to see it. Like,
we
any
don't
of
even
it.
Get a samurai battle.
Not a single battle.
Yeah, you get the couple in the beginning.
You get flashes of battles, but
don't not like
get
a full feudalistic storm the walls yes. of a castle and battle, that, which has literally happened. Like,
yeah,
it was like that. Japan was like basically medieval the way England and Scotland were.
Yeah, right.
But even and, more so.
Well, the last three episodes are teasing this thing called Crimson Sky, which is which makes it sound like what they're going to do is they're going to infiltrate the castle and, you know, take everyone out within Osaka. And I would have even been fine if they'd have flipped that on its head and it was actually like a stealth mission.
Subterfuge.
Yeah, right. It's a stealth mission. They sent a couple of people in there in the first place, which they did. And then other people came in and took out all the bad guys.
Yeah.
But it was more about Torunaga, the main character, politically turning the heads of people within the enemy camp to being allies so that when the war happens and you get a flash forward, which is about 25 seconds of the two armies across from each other, and then it just goes, well, actually, Because I changed the political alliances, they're all going to fight for me. And the main guy's like, ah, shit. Well, that's it. You don't get, like, there's nothing else. And it's, I get it. I enjoyed it. For the amount of buildup and the amount of cock teasing in this, there just wasn't enough finishing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people in that film felt that way.
The show?
Like, yeah, sorry, the show.
Is that what they said?
There was a lot of cock teasing. There's quite a few guys that wanted to get with that one geisha.
Yeah, true.
She was a hot commodity. Anyway.
Not even Mariko, who's the main character. She was great.
Oh, she's beautiful. Good actress. Yeah.
She's awesome as well. I really like her.
Yeah, you don't like the
English guy really pisses me off. I'm going to keep saying this till I die. Everything about him annoys me. The way he walks, his shit accent.
He does walk a bit weird.
Right?
He does.
Right?
Now that you say it, I'm like, why is he like, is he supposed to be injured?
He like totters.
Yeah, he does.
Really annoying. And like,
it's like
outbursts.
He's got a stick up his ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
And he has these random outbursts, which sometimes make sense. And
sometimes... He does that a lot. Yeah,
it's really bad. I will find him. Is he should be in Man of Steel. That's what he should be in. He really annoyed me. Like, any other person, any other human being who acts like a human being could have done that role better.
Yep. I don't know about that. He wasn't that bad.
And then in the last episode, there's like a flash way forward to when he is like an old man, and it's like 30 seconds, maybe a minute. And he's got like two grandkids in the room, and they're like, I can't. And like, he's like dying in bed.
Are they little Japanese babies?
No.
Okay.
They're very English babies. And they're both like, is it true, Dad, that you lived in the Japans? Or are you? And like, he was literally like, he couldn't even speak. He was so old. And it was like, what is the point in this? This doesn't have any relevance or point to this story.
Yeah.
Like, the subterfuge at the end is that the only reason.
Love that word. Subterfuge.
It's great, right? It's nice to say.
Snap.
Is that Torunaga actually only kept the English guy alive the whole time was because he caused division within the political camps of the enemy. So they couldn't decide. The Catholics wanted to kill him because he was an enemy of their god, and the other people wanted Portuguese, to keep him alive for whatever reason. And the only reason he kept him alive was because he A, found him funny, and B, caused this distraction, which kept them all arguing.
And he knew the canon thing, right?
Which makes sense. Well, they didn't even fucking use the cannons! Not one. You see the camera, you get used once in the whole show.
Dude, you were the one at our little beautiful date night last night while we were being serenaded telling me that this show is awesome. You are going hard right now.
It is awesome. It's very good. It's
I'm getting that from what you're putting out there.
Yeah, you're right. Beautifully crafted story. Beautifully executed in terms of everything. Like, you know, whatever the showrunners have done here, the costume creation, the dialogue, the delivery. All of the very simple close-up stuff is great. As soon as you zoom out and you think about it, or you look at a shot where there's a background, bad. Not for me. So like it sort of went down in my estimations from being like, I don't know, we don't talk about grades in this show, but like a low B plus to being like a C minus.
Oof.
Yeah. We don't really talk about that stuff on the show, so that's
how
a
dare
bit
you?
It's a bit taboo, ironically.
That's sanctum.
The Tom Hardy character that the English person plays in this. But yeah. I certainly, aside from all I've said, I recommend going and checking out Shogun. It misses a crescendo at the end. Go check it out if I haven't ruined it for you already. Just for the costumes and the delivery alone, worth sticking it out. Me and the partner both really liked it, but be ready for the fact that there isn't a crescendo.
I'm fully ready. I'm six episodes in and they're still debating if they're going to go to war. I'm like, okay.
Well, that never stops.
This was episode two material.
That never
like
ends.
Literally. Okay.
What have you been up to, DL?
Whatever. I've been watching, I finished Fallout. I know you're not done.
Nice.
But we can talk about more than we could have last week.
Okay. Well, let me give you a very quick preface of this then. So last weekend I started two shows. I started The Gentleman. I watched two episodes of
The
Gentleman.
I've actually been watching that too. I'm on four.
Yeah. Right. So I watched two episodes, and then the partner walked in halfway through the second episode and had a fit at me because she sort of said, was like, why have you been watching this? I wanted to watch it with you. And I had no idea she wanted to watch it with me. So I had to stop. She's just caught up yesterday, so we can now carry on watching The Gentleman together.
Nice.
And yeah, I've seen seven of the eight episodes of Fallout.
What do you think?
Oh, man. I'm digging it.
It's fucking good.
I'm really digging it.
It's really good. It's like good on its own.
Yes.
You don't even have to like even know what Fallout is to enjoy the show, nor will you like not.
And you get all of Fallout
you won't be lost.
From it.
Yeah, you won't be lost.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
I really like it. Genuinely. I feel like it's got the aesthetic, and I like the way that it mixes sort of weird oldie timey technology with newy technology,
and just like the old culture with like, this is
the music.
This is, they nailed the culture of Fallout.
Yes.
And I was thinking about like how and why. Apparently John Nolan wanted to do this movie for like 10 sure. or the show. I keep doing that. This show for like 10 years.
Right.
Like he's been trying to get this made for a long time.
And he's the perfect person.
Yeah. And apparently a bunch of people on the show.
It's him, like, and his wife, I think.
Yeah, it is. Lisa, I think.
Okay.
A bunch of people on the show, like the production, the set, like they specifically hired people that knew
Fallout
and played the game.
That's awesome.
Which is
so much better than Halo.
I think Halo is so bad that we might get like a remake of it eventually.
Halo.
Like in it's 20 years' time.
Yeah, it's going to take a while to do that. But they've just released season 2, haven't they?
Yeah, I still didn't watch. I keep telling myself I should, but I'm also like, fuck that. Don't watch it. It's bad. Make them know it's bad.
Yeah, stop watching it.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, I think we briefly touched on this in a future episode, ironically, but the characters. So, obviously, Snacky is amazing.
Snacky's great.
Ella Purnell, is that her name?
It is something like that. She's English.
Is she?
Yeah. So, she puts on a pretty good American accent.
She is one of the leads, early leads in Yellow Jackets. Fantastic in this. Like, her naivety, you know, having to try and hold on to her morals at any stake is just beautifully done. Maximus, I actually really didn't like in the beginning, but has just grown on me as a character. I think the flaws of how he was brought up, I didn't really appreciate until later on when it's kind of spelt out a bit more to you. I was like, oh, actually, that makes a lot more sense.
I think like you're not supposed to like him. He's supposed to be like the investigation of like, is the wasteland, is the beings of the wasteland, are they redeemable?
Right.
Right?
Right, 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 right.
Whereas, like, the ghoul is more like an investigation of, like, the past and, like, what happened there. Whereas Maximus is like, they're obviously two, it's like a foil.
Yeah.
Lucy and Maximus.
Like. Maximus, though, do you not think he is, like, the perfect love child of Denzel Washington and Jonathan Majors?
I think one of them was the first literally, man to be pregnant.
Literally. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's wild. Everything about it is like there are it depends on the angle of the shot. Most shots I think in Denzel Washington, and then other ones I'm just like, that is just Jonathan Majors.
When he smiles, he looks like Jonathan Majors.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's just madness to me. Now, in a couple of future episodes,
easy recasting for Kane if they wanted to.
Yeah, good point, actually. Yeah. A couple of future episodes, we do a little bit of riffing with each other about various ideas we have. You're going to talk about your book, I think, on our Alien episode, and I'm going to talk about a silly idea I have for Frankenstein on our upcoming The Crow episode. Now, I want to quickly, if you would indulge me, workshop a little something with you. So I think I'm a musical person. I don't like musicals, but I think if I was ever going to write something, it wouldn't be a book, it wouldn't be a film. I think it would be a musical.
Wait, so you don't like musicals, but you want to write a musical?
Very, very short history of me. I grew up in a family that fucking loves musicals, and I've seen every single one multiple times. And I was forced to as a child. And I think I just got it out of my system.
What's your favorite one?
I don't like any of them. Shut up. Starlight Express is fun.
Okay.
What's the one?
Do you know Guys and Dolls?
Do you know Spamalot? That's the best one.
No, I don't know Spamalot.
It is. It's written by the guys in Monty Python. It is a. I don't know if it's a musical. It's more of a theater production. But it's just a play on the Arthurian legend. It's perfect. It's so well done. But this, I think there is an opportunity. Stop me if I'm an idiot here. For Fallout the musical. Now, I got two starting points for this, and you riff with them how you want to riff with them. So it can go one of two ways. So the first one is kind of based around that Maximus and Lucy relationship, and I can't get the I'm just Ken out of my head. You know that I'm just Ken anywhere else that, right? So in this, you can choose between like, switch up the lyrics a little bit. You just play on that, and it's just, we're the brotherhood men. Anywhere else, we'd be Vault 10. And then you got to go from there, right? So they're looking into the vaults, wishing they were part of that civilization.
Okay, yeah.
Right, that's one way you can go with it.
Yes.
I feel like there's something there.
Okay.
And this one is kind of in the same vein. I don't know if this one works quite as well, but it is looking the other way out. It's someone in the vault who
looking
wants
to the wasteland.
So there's an episode in Fallout where they send Lucy back to the wasteland from a vault there. I think it's Vault 4. Similar vibe, but someone who's maybe fallen for Lucy in that moment, the few minutes they have together, and they're looking out against Vault 10, because that's the best one to rhyme with Ken, obviously. But it's just like, I'm Vault 10. Anywhere else, I'd be your friend. And then you just like expand from there.
Okay.
I'm like there's a musical in this. I know there is.
I feel like you've got quite a bit of musical chops as well.
I think I just really like that song.
I think you really need to reevaluate your own opinion of your opinion on musicals.
You don't have to love what you do. If you're good at it, who cares?
I think it helps.
There are soccer players who are literally mercenaries. It's like, you don't have to love being a soccer player to be a soccer player.
I think that's just loving playing soccer and loving money.
I mean, they just love money. Yeah. They don't love that. But what do you think? Do you think there's something there?
Look, I think that I wouldn't want John Nolan to stray too far from his vision.
John Nolan would have to be involved in this.
If you want to do like a side within the Fallout universe.
Completely.
Yeah.
This could even be like an inside joke in the Fallout universe.
Yeah, like one of the radios.
Mini play.
In the background.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah, because in the game, you can like listen to different radio stations.
It's amazing. Guys, if there's anything we haven't talked about that you have been up to, feel free to hit us up. You can hit us up at PodcastAssemble or thepodcastassemble@gmail.com. We love it when you send us memes, news, and reviews. We'll call you out when you do. Some very cool suggestions from people who have seen Monkey Man over the last couple of weeks, saying that they're excited to go back and listen to our Monkey Man episode. Appreciate it if you do. DL.
Yes.
Do you want to preface our main topic this week?
Main topic.
It's the main topic theme.
It is The Fall Guy by David Lynch, directed by David Lynch, who did Deadpool, the Deadpool 2, I should say. Yeah. Both of them, I think. Bullet Train,
baby.
A few other things. So, you know.
Produced John Wick.
Yes, produced John Wick.
This is the guy right now. Yeah, he's everywhere.
He's doing well.
Yeah.
And we've got our leads, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt.
Smoldering Ryan Gosling.
I mean, they're both smoldering.
Right.
The chemistry here is wild.
Crackling.
What a fun movie.
Yeah.
Spicy margaritas for all.
Aaron Taylor Johnson is this, as Tom Ryder. Hannah Waddington, who you'll know from Ted Lasso, is in this as Gale. Yes. Tessa Palmer's Iggy Star. You got Winston Duke, who you will know from Black Panther.
Yeah, Black Panther.
Infinity War, it's M'Baku, and obviously all the stuntmen who are the real stars of the show. Do you have a stupid plot summary?
Of course I do, dude.
Of course!
Yeah.
Why would you ask?
Ryan Gosling might be the most elite charmer in the game, and Emily Blunt's comedy chops were undervalued, just like the stuntman and woman whom this movie pays homage to. After this movie, Eva Mendes will feel a feeling she's never felt before that the rest of us all have, called jealousy. Fucking dude.
I think
there was chemistry.
Let's talk about that in just a minute. Let me do mine very quickly. The noble stuntman gets his due in this action rom-com where the producers have no issue taking shots at everything from Dune to Taken. I think that nicely sums up how I feel about this one. Yeah, it's literally that. They definitely dragged that from this, right?
They must have inserted that. I guess Dune 1 was out a while ago. What am I saying?
Dune 1 was. Yeah. I wonder if they saw how well Dune 2 did and went back and did a little... Because it wasn't exactly the same.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't exactly the same. Before we get into plot and stuff, like, let me ask you this, right? If you were an actor's husband or partner, whatever it is, and you saw the crackling chemistry of like your spouse and someone as beautiful as Ryan Gosling on screen as this movie does, if you're John Krasinski, effectively,
yes,
are you a bit worried after this long filming schedule?
I mean, like, you got to be a professional, right?
I mean, that's fair.
It's part of the game, dude. Sometimes you got to act like you have autism. Sometimes you got to sing like you're Frank Sinatra. And sometimes you got to make out with Emily Blunt, dude.
What a hard life, dude. I feel so bad for him.
Honestly, the only performance that I've seen with this level of chemistry was Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, which did result in an affair. So,
okay.
I mean, as well as Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper,
true.
Which shortly thereafter he got a divorce. So I'm not saying anything other than...
Well, we're casting no aspersions here.
But yeah, like you might be a bit jealous. Yeah.
But saying that, though, it's the Joey Tribbiani thing for anyone who has seen Friends, is if there is chemistry on screen, perhaps they haven't hooked up. So maybe that's a good thing.
Because the tension.
Exactly. You keep that tension there. What's the plot here, DL? What happens in this movie?
It's a great movie, man. It's simple but great. We follow the stuntman Colt Severs who's basically the stuntman for one of Hollywood's top blockbuster actors, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson.
It's never going to fail to make me laugh at that joke.
Alongside an up-and-coming camera lead, Jodie Moreno, played by Emily Blunt, whose young romance is cut short after a stunt accident turns Colt into a burrito-eating valet who gets lost to the world.
Considering the amount of bad life, dude. Considering the amount of burritos he has, he's very ripped.
Not a bad life. Well, he was eating his green kale as well. They made sure to show that.
Fair point. They did. You're right.
When Jody's Big Break movie, a year later...
Big Break movie
is in production trouble with the lead actor missing.
MIA.
Tom Ryder, who's played by, again, Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Their mutual producer friend, played by Hannah Waddingham, played by Gail Meyer from Ted Lasso, brings the Fall Guy to set in order to help, which kicks off kind of quite a whirly-twirly tale.
Yeah. I think you get a good approximation of what this is from the trailer.
There's a couple of misdirects.
That's a couple of spoilers that we're going to chuck in there at the end, but I really genuinely just liked the premise of this. And I was quite, and like you say, because of that whirly-twirliness, I was very happy that it wasn't just paint by numbers. The trailer just gave everything away, that we knew exactly where this was going to go. Like, it's a little tropian, it's a little silly, but I think the chemistry and the performances and the charm of the two leads just kind of like paper over those cracks.
It has tropes, but it's like really, really novel in a lot of ways too.
Yes, agreed.
It's a unique like take, and it's obviously paying homage to something that like is not that... Investigated or focused on, and it's like a cool part of the movie industry, and you actually get to see a lot of that. Like, they film people filming things, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
And I would say it's actually like the plot, maybe when you sum it up, is a bit tropey, but not really. Like, the stylings are very unique. Like, the double lens they do at certain parts. The obvious satire is like it's really on the nose but funny, and
it's one quip away from like hanging a lance on it in quotation marks, which is effectively when you're in a movie and something stupid happens. Like, a perfect example is in the Avengers. You know when Hawkeye meets Black Widow for the first time, and it's we're on a floating city, and I have a bow and arrow. Nothing makes sense. It's like hanging a lance on it is calling out something as stupid by an actor, so the audience goes, oh, they know it's stupid, so it must be
like
all
time
right
travel, yada yada yada. It's almost like it's like a step below Deadpool, right? You know, talking to the camera.
Yeah, they're not breaking the fourth wall or anything, but like, I like how they do that. For example, the scene, like you mentioned, with the split screen where they have two characters doing a similar thing in two halves of the screen. They had a nice novel feel to it, as in they were actually talking about making movies and what that feels like and what that sounds like. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was. And I think you know, you can have all that beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
The leads, I think, just carried this really well.
Yes.
Not that the other people didn't do well. It's just that, like, they were really good, I thought, for the most part. And they were most of the movie, so they needed to be.
And one thing, I think I said this to you in the theater, was I do think there is just something missing from this, like an extra layer to the characters, or like just an extra facet to make them feel a little bit more real, that maybe gets touched on further towards the end of the movie. But just the charm of them both, like Gosling, like he is in his absolute pomp in this, like of the comedy stylings of Ryan Gosling. This is all, like, I gotta say, he's pretty up there. Like, Channing Tatum's a prime example of someone who started off with a slightly different focus in Hollywood and has been... Yeah. He's molded his career through using comedy and, you know, getting roles really right to push that direction. Yeah. Where do you think this fits in his like comedy masterclasses then? So the three I can think of off the top of my head were The Other Guys, Barbie, and obviously this.
Yeah.
He's obviously in other comedies, but like specifically.
Those are like three of, they're all really good.
Right.
And he's really funny in them. We were talking about how he's like kind of, he hasn't done a drama in a while. It's true, but I don't know.
Looking at his filmography, it's not that long ago.
I mean, 2017, we're in 2024.
Yeah, I mean...
2017 was Blade Runner. And again, it was kind of more like Drive. He didn't talk a lot. Anyway, my point being, he has kind of leaned into the comedy lately.
Yes, absolutely. And I think his public persona has as well a bit too.
I don't know. I think Barbie's got to be on top because it's so unique.
Yeah, right.
And I haven't seen the other guys recently enough to say, but this, I was laughing a lot. Like, his just pure magnetism and charm and like a couple witty
100%.
Like, it almost felt like some of it was ad-libbed. Like, I enjoyed this one. It might be above the other guys for me if I had to rate them.
And for me as well, that's really hard. Like, exactly same reasons. I think because this is fresher in my memory, probably so, but The Other Guys is one of my favorite dark comedies. Yeah. The bit where Russell Crowe just snaps his arm. Like, it just is nonstop, and I absolutely love that about that movie.
I gotta say, I've never understood more vividly that sexuality is a spectrum than after the 2 hours in this movie. This man,
you've joined me.
Is so
you've joined
good
me on the spectrum.
He's so good looking,
but he's got
so
everything.
Charming, and he is so shredded.
He's like cut from another cloth, but he's also rugged. Like he can do the like smooth thing.
The hair,
he's got everything.
Beautiful, it's just man. It's raw sex appeal.
We're not really talking about this movie, unfortunately, Shay. So I think if we dive a little bit into it, then the thing I like about this in terms of the world. So we throw into this world. It's our world. It's actually all filmed in our home city, Sydney.
It is.
So
they make sure to remind you.
It is the most Aussieisms movie I think I've ever seen. They literally lean so heavily into that. But the thing, it's not actually shot across that many different sets. So there is only really. Outside of like the very beginning of the film, there is the movie sets that they're on. There is the apartment that Tom Ryder's character lived in that they go back to a few times. There's a club, and then there's the hotel. Outside of that, you know, there's a couple of street scenes. There isn't a huge amount of variety in where they're at, but they keep it fresh by mixing it up for Gosling. So prime example of that is there's a scene where Gosling's character gets drugged and he's seeing a bloody unicorn everywhere, and that overlaps with the split screen element of it too. And I like that they didn't use that many, like they clearly kept all their budget for explosions.
Yeah, but
they kept going back to the similar things but keeping it fresh in these different ways.
I did too. And there was just like cute, it was like a lot of homages to like film in general too.
Definitely.
There was a lot of like moments where they like would make a quote and one of them, the other character had to call what the quote was from.
Right.
There was like really cool like things like that. The choreography of the fights was pretty badass as well. Like, I quite enjoyed a lot of the, movie about stuntmen, so
you don't say
they did a lot. They were pretty clear in what they were doing there, and it was a lot of fun. Every scene had that, like something where you're like, whoa!
I tell you what's really interesting about this. So this movie has apparently been in development like since like 2010. So like nearly 15 years of development for this, with the likes of Tom Cruise, Keanu Reeves, Nicolas Cage, Jason Statham, Dwayne Johnson, all at times been eyed to play the role of Colt Stevens, which I find fascinating because I don't think any of them can do this role in the way that Ryan Gosling does it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I mean, Ryan's like he's like top build.
He's unique.
He's top build in Hollywood right now. He's
right.
Probably like,
he's in his pump.
When you ask like a director for like a movie that's got a lot of potential, right?
Yeah.
Who are the five people that they want to talk to about it? He's in there with, he might be higher than Leo right now because Leo can't do the same type of stuff that
he can
do anymore.
No.
He's not good looking enough. He's not fit. He's not yoked, but he's in that top five.
He's got that dad bod.
It'd be, you know, it's like him, Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal's,
you know,
up there,
like,
yeah.
Then there's the young guns, but like he's one of the top five.
Well, I made the point. I had a point about this I was going to ask you about, which was, so I think he's really picking his roles incredibly well. And I feel like he is just keeping himself outside of doing too many movies and getting the oversaturation that Ryan Reynolds had like a year, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, when you were just like, holy fuck, he's released four movies in the last like 6 months. Like, because I think he's selective and he keeps it, you know, and each one has a different twist on something.
Yeah,
so like,
there's
even
a little
comedy,
bit more variety in his comedy,
right,
too.
And his performances, definitely.
Whereas like Ryan Gosling kind of plays the same.
Reynolds.
Or sorry, Ryan Reynolds plays the same like kind
of. He just plays himself.
Yeah.
And Deadpool all the time. But those actors I just mentioned, so Cruise, Reeves, Nicolas Cage, Jason Statham, Dwayne Johnson. I would have loved Nicolas Cage in this. I would have loved to have seen what that movie looks like. Like, he's probably a little old now.
Yeah.
But 10 years ago, that's got some chops.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see what that looks like. But Dwayne Johnson, absolutely not for this. Like, no chance at all. But Emily Blunt, we're talking around her a little bit. Like, it is more of a subtle performance from her, would you say?
I thought she was great. I thought it was one of the better things I've seen her in.
Right.
Like, she just plays the, like, strong, independent woman that still wants to love really well.
Interesting. So
I loved it.
I have a note. I felt like she needed to be a bit more independent from Colt. Like,
I don't know.
It only just about passes the Bechdel test.
I don't think so. I think it passes it in colors. She's the director. She's the one that architects the plan. She like executes the plan in the end without going into spoilers. She is the main woman who's like powering the movie. The things out of her control are not due to the main character.
Mm.
It's due to the villain.
True.
Like, I would argue that
the true villain,
and I would argue it also aligns to the theme that she's reaching out to someone even when she's vulnerable. The theme of the movie, like the fact that she wants to find love while also enjoying work, is not a mark against her agency. It's just, you know, I think a part of what they're trying to say about the movie.
Interesting.
With the movie,
I interesting. Say. I wasn't the biggest fan of Aaron Taylor's Johnson in this. Like, I think Tom Ryder, like,
it's his Johnson has been his better. Johnson. It has been better.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, his Johnsoning has certainly been better.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's a symptom of how this film progresses. And like, we'll talk a bit more about it in spoilers. It sort of stunts that character a little bit. Yeah. Like after a while, this totally zigged when I thought it was going to zag with this. That from I'll talk about it a bit more in spoilers, but where I felt this was going from the trailers, it definitely subverted my expectations, definitely around that character. I was just a bit like, didn't vibe with him the same way I felt I might with a film like this. But Hannah Waddington's great in this.
She's
Gail
awesome.
Meyer.
She's always good.
She's just got something. Yeah. She's just a star. You know what I mean?
I read something that like her acting teacher told her to like quit or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if every actor heard that and quit,
I think
then,
that there is like a lot of that in general.
Absolutely nonsense. Yeah. Well, the breakneck pace of this really keeps you engaged. There's not a moment goes by without a new action scene. And they do interesting things with action. It's not a tropey action film,
no,
I would say.
No, it's like not like all the standard set pieces.
Yeah.
Minus maybe the end. But even then.
We'll take the end out of that conversation because we'll talk about that, I think. But in terms of the small action scenes building up to that, they're all compelling. They're all a little different. And they all have roots in the movie. There's a boat chase scene where he's sort of talked about being able to do boat action with his hands tied behind his back, in quotation marks. He actually does.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's good payoffs to, like, minor quips throughout the film. And I think it even would be good as a watch back. You know what I mean? I feel like you get more.
I mean, there was just a lot of quick comedy.
Yes.
And also, something I would say is, you know, like, in those 90s or, like, early 2000s movies, there was always, like, little like, cameo, not cameos, but, like, little performances by smaller actors that were just like random and hilarious and kind of stole the show and a few or stole the scene. There's a few of those.
Okay.
I would not put Big Red in there. He annoyed the hell out of me. But what about I'm a Genie in the Bottle guy?
Oh, yeah.
He was hilarious.
Yeah, he was great.
He was great.
Up and comers getting there, like proper.
Like
proper
just like
shots.
Random little side people that are like, be funny. Like, it's your scene to just go make a big choice. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And
yes.
He just goes,
be bold.
I'm a genie. It's just hilarious.
It's great.
So good. There's a couple of those.
You're right. Like, you don't get a lot of that.
You don't really get that as much anymore. You know what I realized? Like I watched There's Something About Mary recently.
Film.
And there's just a lot of that in that film. Like a couple of random like cameo performances that are like really quite funny. And
they really are.
Yeah. And you just forget about them because they're only in it for like a scene or two in the movie. But when you go back and rewatch, you're like, oh, I forgot about this scene.
Like who? Give me
like, there's like one where he's like, he's in the car going to Florida and he picks up a hitchhiker.
Who's he? Ben Stiller?
Ben Stiller, yeah. Okay. The guy who's chasing Mary. He picks up a hitchhiker and it's just like this random actor. I don't know who he is, but he like plays like this really, really like kind of creepy hitchhiker, but it's like quite funny. There's a number, like there's the, well, I guess Matt Dillon's a main character in that film. I'd forgotten.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
But he is hilarious in that.
Right. I think, and I mean, everything has great little cameos. So, for example, my favorite one to harken back to is, harken back is a great way of saying that.
Harkening.
Is the Will Ferrell cameo in Austin Powers 1 and or 2. You know, where he's like, you don't even remember it's him until you are pointed out that's Will Ferrell. Like, he's the guy who gets shot with the dart and falls off the cliff and it cuts back. And then he's like, I think I'm going to try and stand up. I think my leg's broken. I'm going to try. My other one's broken. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Like the way these guys get, and a lot of them go from like SNL and stuff into these types of movies, but you can tell they're going to be stars.
Like Kevin Hart in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you can just tell immediately.
Yeah, I agree, man. We need more. We need more cameos.
Bring them back.
Give people a chance to just do a little SNL skit.
Yeah.
In your movie. It'll usually work.
$50 million movie.
It's just a scene. It'll usually work.
And he's usually just singing, I'm a genie in a bottle.
He's also just the guy. He's the same guy that like, he has a couple moments. He's like yelling at the pyrotechnics. Like, yeah, I will gut you like a pig.
And then the chick character's like, oh, is he sexy? Like dumb shit like that. And I think that's what made, you were talking about the quick fire humor before. It's not just the main two, even though I feel like Gosling's just got like a, like his delivery is like on point.
It's unique.
Yeah.
It's almost like quiet and loud.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a couple of points where I just don't know what he's going to say. And then he just screams it. I'm like, pah! Like, it's just quite funny.
I think we'll move on to spoilers pretty quickly then. So Love Conquers All is a theme for me. Male vulnerability you talked about before, I absolutely agree in terms of that. Any other themes in terms?
Yeah, no, I think it's just like male, it's not even just male vulnerability, it's like it's okay to be vulnerable, like male vulnerability in his character, but also, you know, they explore it a lot with her in that fucking hilarious sequence.
Yeah, exactly.
Where she like confronts him on his first day back at the job after like leaving her without a word, and she just makes him do this one stunt over and over and over. He's obviously getting injured and getting on fire. And like that whole sequence is like her basically confronting her feelings kind of in front of a lot of people. I just think it's agreed. I think it's a big theme in the movie for both, absolutely, both main characters.
So we haven't really talked about the movie that they're in. So it's obviously Emily Blunt's big break. Yeah. And it is just a rip on like somewhere between Mad Max and Dune. It's like bang in the middle. And
it looks terrible.
It's nonsense. But I love the way they're hyping up as if it's going to be the next big fucking thing. It's great. And it looks like it's filmed by Zack Snyder.
It does.
Which makes it even worse.
It does. When they do the little film sequences.
DL, do you have three best and three worst for me?
Yeah, I think best. I mean, the leads are freaking amazing, hilarious, great chemistry. Both of them extremely good looking.
Yeah.
Just doing
frustratingly good looking.
Yeah, just doing their best.
How yoked Ryan Gosling is.
Yeah, dude,
this?
And Emily Blunt like looks younger. I mean, like
she looks great.
I mean, you know, injections, they probably both have done them.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I don't want to just point all Hollywood.
Has.
I don't want to just put it on her, but like she actually looks good on her. I'm like, oh, this is why people do it.
Yep.
And the stunts, dude. The stunts are phenomenal throughout the whole movie. A lot of practical stunts and real explosions.
Not too much CGI. I feel like they've been very sparing with it.
Yeah, only a couple.
Agreed.
Fairly unique plot despite the tropes of the like kind of rom-com-y story. Yeah. And a bit of misdirection in it as well from the trailer. Like, I was actually a bit surprised. I thought we were going to be just chasing the...
Well, we'll talk about that in spoilers, yeah. I agree. The action was just sensational. Like you say, taking tropey ideas and putting a unique spin on them. The scene where they're fighting on the back of a truck and the back of the truck bit, like, slips off and it's, like, spinning and they're having a fight. Oh,
that was a really cool
primo
scene. The dog. Yeah. What was it, the French dog, dude?
The dog was
Why
one
was
of my
French?
Favorite
Did they
characters.
Explain that?
No reason.
Okay.
No reason at all. Just liked it. The way they turned something that's totally overlooked into like the key driver of the film. You know, the stuntman, how he can just kind of leave the set and go on this wild goose chase to find the main guy and no one notices in quotation marks.
Yeah.
Great. And just that Gosling, he's just peak here.
Yeah, he's
absolute peak
blind
Gosling.
High, dude.
I feel like if we don't get too oversaturated with him, he's selective with his roles. Maybe do something a bit more serious next.
I would be down for like an action, like a thriller.
Same.
Like a creepy thriller.
Give me his version of Enemy.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Oh, dude, that might be bad. Even Enemy, I'm like, I don't, have you seen it?
Yeah.
I'm not convinced.
It's
it's super artsy. I enjoyed it because it's,
Let's
I enjoyed
Gosling.
Let's
put him with Denis Villeneuve for his next film and see what they go for.
Yeah.
Worst?
Worst, not enough of Aaron Taylor's Johnson.
Okay.
I must say.
Yeah, okay.
I was looking forward to more of that. Just because you film a movie in Australia doesn't mean you need to lean hard into every Aussie trope and accent there ever was. It feels like any movie filmed in Australia needs to have all these Americanized tropes of Australia in it. Not every film in New York has a guy yelling, "I'm walking here." You can film here and not rub the viewer's face in kangaroo poo. Like, let's, come on. Yeah.
I did. There is a scene when Ryan Gosling turns up at Lucy's set, and he's greeted by the most Australian human being, of all time, and he's like, "G'day, mate," like, "Where?" And he's like, "The fuck? What? No one speaks like that."
I think there was obviously some Aboriginal actors in it as well, which I'm all for, like,
totally.
But I just mean like even like the main red guy, like.
Right.
He's so Aussie. Anyway.
I mean, you can have diversity. And I actually genuinely, that's a point I should have made.
But I think he put on an accent.
The diversity in the film was great. I think they overplayed certain elements of it.
Yeah. And then,
in a distracting way. Not in a bad way, a distracting way.
No, in a way that takes you out of it. We're like, okay, we get it. It's in Australia.
Yeah.
The
fucking opera house was in it enough. Like, it was in the background. Of
I don't even,
90%
I don't
of shots.
Even mind that. It's to me, it's like when they, I mean, I get your point. It's in the same vein. It's but when they were specifically like lean into the accent like whatever it might be.
And the girlfriend of Aaron Taylor Johnson, like his whatever she was called, that accent was
counter
bad.
Actress, yeah.
Bad. Anyway.
Some plot beats with some pretty absurd plot holes. I honestly didn't mind, but I'm just nitpicking here because it wouldn't have been hard not to have them keep you like in it and like make a, you know, write it out.
I think the charm of the movie sort of skates over a lot of that.
Yeah, 100%. But it would be like, it wouldn't have been hard to like fix it. So a few that come to mind, like, why does this movie star have what seems like an endless supply of gangster henchmen?
Yes.
Wielding automatic weapons in a country where some of the strictest gun laws exist in the world.
Right.
Not really. They just don't even yada yada. They just don't even acknowledge it.
I'm excited because there's a couple that are actually incredibly spoilery that I think we'll say.
Does nobody understand the cloud?
No.
No one understands
the cloud. No one understands the cloud.
Or like auditing software in general.
No. Nope.
We'll get to that in spoilers. And I guess one of mine is actually, the next one's a spoiler too, so I'll leave it out.
Okay.
But there's plenty.
I mean, yeah, a couple of mine fall into spoilers too, so I'm just going to say the final action scene was so over the top. Like, it was fun, and I was carried away with it at the time.
It didn't need to be there.
Looking back, they could have they could have saved some budget and used it elsewhere, you know what I mean? Yeah, and like you say, just it could have been more subtle with the Australiana in it. Like, it didn't need to be...
Australiana?
Not everyone needed to be an Ocker, you know what I mean? It's like, calm down.
Like, everyone is from like the deepest part of Queensland.
Not everyone
in this movie
sounds like this. Yeah. And then, like you say, there's a scene, the scene that I was talking about before where they're fighting on the back of the truck, where it starts, they're driving away from the opera house. And then towards the end of it, they don't turn around at any point, but they're going back across the bridge towards the opera house. And I mean, only someone from Sydney who lives here
would
pick that up. Yeah. But I was literally like, when did they turn around? Like,
it's
are they
wide
driving
bridge,
a different
but
direction?
It's a big truck.
Yeah, big truck. Anyway, I only had those two, to be quite honest with you. Can you guess me the current IMDb score for this?
I think it should be in the eights, but I bet it's like 7.6 or something.
7.4.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's probably like too tropey for
some critics.
Critics. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we're obviously not critics. So.
It would be doing way better on Rotten Tomatoes. I'd say 85.
Ooh, it's 89.
Ooh,
like I think that's good.
Yeah.
What do you finally think about Letterboxd, which is always 3.6, but never 3.6. It is exactly 3.6
for sure. Yeah.
It had to be, right?
This is like the perfect 3.6.
Right, absolutely. So what do you think of our key rating system then, DL? So we don't do 5 out of 10. We don't do 6.9 out of 7. We just say whether this is better or worse than the most average movie that we know. The internet's polarizing, so why shouldn't we be? Is it better or worse than Aquaman 2018?
So much better than Aquaman.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's got real action.
Aquaman's funny.
I mean, its main actress seems a bit more wholesome.
Interested.
just wholesome in general.
Yeah.
As does its main protagonist. I don't think Jason Momoa was very interested in the last one. I think that's my
spoilers.
My summary. Yeah, should we go into spoilers?
Speaking of Jason Momoa, he's in this.
He's in this movie.
Well,
he looked a little bit tubby.
He just doesn't give a shit. He just likes
put on some weight. I get it.
But for some reason,
in whatever outfit they gave him, it was like extra non.
You reckon?
He looked too tight? Yeah, I don't know what it was. But
so I guess the key spoilers for this then are that Aaron Taylor Johnson's character actually caused Colt's accident at the start of the movie, which makes him take time off and grow apart from.
Because he was like doing
Lucy
too. He was like taking too much away from him.
Well, he's just a. He's just an actor who's all up in his own head who thinks that, you know, he's not getting the kudos he deserves for these multi-million dollar movies. Because there's like, you know, there's bits where he's like, oh, you can see his chin in that. We need to do it again. And he's basically getting paranoid about someone stealing his limelight, which actually leads to the real spoiler of the movie, which is the point where Aaron Taylor Johnson's rider kills his own stuntman by accident by kicking him because he's in a drug-fueled, like, party rage.
Party rage, yeah.
And effectively, the whole point of bringing Colt to Sydney to be part of this film is so that Gail's plan is to frame him.
Yeah, to frame him for the murder.
Yeah.
So she brings him in. They haven't been speaking, Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling's characters.
18 months.
For 18
he runs
months.
Away.
He went,
He's
yeah.
scared of his feelings.
He runs away, scared of his feelings after the accident where he kind of like failed and didn't feel good. And so we find out he wasn't his fault and he's the bait. He's the bait for the murder frame.
And this it brings up like some interesting conversations. And I didn't really talk about it that much within, you know, general points of the story, but the idea is that in the movie, they are putting dots on Colt's face so that they can deep fake in Ryder's face over the top of him and all of the topic around AI and, you know, CGI and how far it goes and where it stops. They basically use AI to deep fake Colt's face onto Ryder's, where in this video he has on his phone where he's murdering this guy and then trying to cover it up. It's really interesting and it really gently touches on some of the pain points of the industry right now where they're sort of like, you know, what happened with all the writer strikes and all those things. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the deep fake thing, and I was like, somebody just threw that in there for sure.
Right.
That was, but you know, it is relevant.
It's a cultural relevant touch point. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so the what flipped me out about the movie was I thought it was just going to be Colt trying to find Ryder and him, you know, the kidnappers moving him around, and then maybe they demand something. They want to be, I don't know. There would have been some deeper reason. But what was actually happening was Ryder was the one with Gale who was orchestrating it all in the background to try and just frame Colt for all of these terrible things that are going on. And it was an interesting twist on it. I like that.
Yeah, I agree too. It was in general, like the producer villain was good.
Yeah, Gale.
Like, yeah, I loved that. Like I just, not your partner.
I mean, loved Gale.
I love that angle.
Gale is the villain of this piece.
She is. I loved that angle. And I loved that even in the end, Ryder couldn't help but say, he's the best Tubman I had. it was pretty good, dude. The
climax is fun as well. So effectively they frame Gosling for this pretty handily, actually. And they deepfake a video on Colt's phone. They believe Colt is dead. And then what happens is he turns up to set and they put Ryder in a scene because he can't do his own stunts, basically, where he's forced into doing a stunt.
Yeah.
And because he has his own microphone on still, and he's so freaking dumb, he admits to the murder, like, on the scene. And the big final action shot.
This is a trap. And he's like, you put on the microphone,
dipshit. It's your microphone, dude. Yeah, it's great. It's great. Mm. I think the main spoiler bit within the themes of the film, Gosling, you know, having to open up to Emily Blunt's character.
Yeah.
He does vulnerability really well.
Yeah, he's got that motive eyes, you know, charming. Yes. You can forgive him.
I do love the bit where he's sat in the car listening to Taylor Swift, and she's like, "Are you crying?"
It's so good.
And he's like, "No."
He's like a lovable hunk.
Yeah,
like he does that. He plays that really well.
Right.
I don't know like many others that could do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think maybe it wouldn't be as charming, but it would be funny if
Mark Wahlberg. I'm kidding.
No, I was going to say, what was the guy you talked about earlier?
Which one
from 23 Jump Street.
Oh, Channing Tatum could pull that off. I think so.
Yeah, and I think he has before.
I think between those two, like, so Channing Tatum's obviously not like in that sort of A-S tier actor, you know what I mean?
Well, he hasn't had as many successful dramas.
Big hits, yeah, you're right.
He's done mostly successful comedies.
Yes.
And sexual dancing movies.
Which, you know, that's not really a comedy.
No.
I think the thing I really liked about this at the end of it as well was that they just... I thought what was going to happen was when you learn everything that was going on and that Gosling was being framed, et cetera, et cetera. I thought because they'd had the dots on them the whole time, they were just going to deep fake Gosling's face into the film so that he became the main actor. Then he obviously came away from being a stuntman. But I actually really liked
that
was his role. And then they just had Jason Momoa in it.
I like that they
end.
Didn't, and they kind of made it like a thing about Hollywood. Like, yes. Oh, they just call the next big guy and he throws in a half-assed performance. Like, yeah.
I thought Jason Momoa looked fun in this. I liked what he was doing.
It's so him.
He got paid probably so much just to do fuck all on this film.
I don't know. You reckon? Yeah. He was probably just next door. He was in New Zealand.
Maybe. Like, yeah. Just hanging out.
Oh, come by.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Overall, man, go check this film out. I had absolute blast of it. It's so much fun. Like, and that, like, I think for the first half an hour, maybe there was, I did feel there was that something missing in it. So like another layer to the characters, which I think maybe was brought out more by Gosling's vulnerability. But once I got over that and the humor, the charm, all of that just really swept me away in it. So shall we finish with a little bit of trivia, true or false deal?
Yeah, let's do it.
Trivia. Okay. Ryan Gosling had a chance encounter with Steven Spielberg, who told him that he loved the movie.
Yeah.
Is that true or is that false?
I don't know if it'd be chance. They probably run in the same circles. So, but I'll give you that.
Chance enough.
You weren't messing around. I'd say true.
It is true. Gosling actually said that, in quotes, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter what happens anymore with the movie. Steven Spielberg liked it. That's all that matters for me. It's great.
Good for him.
I mean, Spielberg's lost it a little bit. You know, we've talked about the auteurism before. And
What has he done?
Great
recently?
Question. He's not done great things. His last couple of movies, he did West Side Story. He did like an autobiographical type movie about his life.
Weird shit.
Nah, not great. Yeah. Trivia or false deal. You can put a little score counter in the top corner. It's ding.
Okay. Ding.
Best of four. Trivia or false deal. Rumors of an on-set romance followed the films, but not between who you might think. Not between Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. Actually, between stars Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Hannah Waddingham. Is that true or is that false?
False.
It's false. I just made that up for you. You're getting mine way too easily here. I don't like it. I don't like you, DL. I don't like that you're getting this.
Aaron Taylor Johnson deserves better.
He's married to an older woman.
I thought he was. Yeah.
He's got like, he's apparently like,
I didn't know she was older, but I knew she was married.
Significantly. Yeah. He's super happy. I think she was in her 40s something when he was 18. Good for him.
Wild.
I think, well, I mean, he was like, you know, like you live who you love. And like,
no, it's facts. It's not often you see that.
He was like, I saw an interview with him where it's like, yeah, like when most people, what things they're doing at like 21, I was doing at 14. So it doesn't feel weird to him. Good for him. Good for him. Trivia, true or false, DL? This movie is actually a remake of a movie called The Fall Guy from 1981. Is that true or is that false?
It is false. It's a remake of a TV show.
Actually, it is a movie. Lee Majors played Colt. A very similar vibe. Lee Majors actually cameoed at the end of this. You know that weird cameo at the very, very end of the film when there was that the really was old guy? Yes.
And they made a big thing about it. I was like,
that was the original actor from this movie. You will know the name Lee Majors from a ton of stuff. He was in The $6 Million Man. He was in Scrooge. He was in The Big Valley. He was in a lot of very American TV-ish shows from when you were younger.
Got it.
Finally, trivia, true or false, DL. David Litch made the choice to direct the movie instead of casting a Chris Rock movie. Is that true or is that false?
I hope it's true. It's not a hard choice.
Actually, David Litch made the choice to direct this movie instead of a Will Smith movie.
Even better.
Fast and Loose.
Good change.
And he made the choice.
A subtle change.
The week before Will Smith slapped Chris Rock at the Oscars.
The week before or after?
The week before Will Smith.
Premonitioned.
Right? Isn't that just good for him? I've never even heard of that movie, to be quite perfectly honest with you. Fast and Loose. Nah, never heard of it. Look, as I say, guys, ultimately this movie, I was super excited for this anyway. I think it had all the, you know, pieces on the chessboard to be a really fun movie, but it moved away from some tropes, subverted my expectations a little bit. I had a great time. What do you think, DL?
Oh, it's awesome. I really enjoyed this movie.
Recommend?
Highly recommend. Perfect. Like, it's one of those few movies that are like mainstream enough not to put off some like, you know, artsy fartsy guy like me that likes to analyze everything.
Yep.
But is also, you know, fun enough to not alienate, you know, everyone else.
Right? Absolutely. Should we wrap up the show?
Yeah, let's close it out, man. A big thank you to the man, the myth, the legend, Matthew Bliss, for editing and mastering this week's episode. If you'd like to be a part of Matt's team, if you'd like Matt to be a part of your team, come on now. He's a free agent. Get in there, Matt. Not a free agent, I should say. There is a fee, but he's a free agent.
What are you saying here?
I don't know.
You've lost the plot.
Starting it. A big thank you to Matthew Bliss for editing and mastering this week's episode. If you'd like Matt to be a part of your podcasting squad, get in touch with him on Matt or at business@mbpod.com or head to mbpod.com to find out more about his services. If you want to hear his work, he's got a new pod called Coffee with a Podcaster. Go listen to it. Think about it like comedians in cars getting coffee,
right?
Except about podcasting.
Short form.
Thought pieces, informed, you know, material on topics of podcasting shared over a delightful cup of Joe.
It's short and sweet, and it's once again very wholesome content. You guys should check
it
out.
Not too sweet. I don't like sugar in my coffee. Damn. I get black.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So many jokes. Why are you laughing?
I like it black.
I'll get back to that later.
Oh, come on, dude.
Where can they find us, DL?
They can find us at PodcastAssemble on Instagram or thepodcastassemble@gmail.com.
Where we rolled out.
Oh, yeah, there's a new rebrand.
Our brand new rebrand. Guys, let us know what you think. Yeah, I actually had a little bit of correspondence from one of the friends of the show. Very quickly, friend of the show, Joe, messaged us and he said, love this. It looks so sick, guys. But then he also followed up by saying, we are the two whitest men on the internet. So I...
Hey, I have a tan. Stop this right now. But well, thank you for the kind words as well.
That's awesome. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Laters, gators.